It's time for Hogue Health Radio, brought to you by Hogue Memorial Hospital Presbyterian, Orange County's top hospital. And now, here's Deborah Howell.
Hello there and welcome to our show. Thanks very much for listening and for telling a friend. Today we're speaking with Dr. Paul Selecki, director of the Hogue Pulmonary Department and a diplomat of the American Board of Sleep Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Selecki.
Yes, hello. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. I thought we'd talk a little bit about some common sleep disorders since you're well-versed in that area, to say the least. What's the most common disorder you've treated?
Insomnia.
Okay.
Insomnia is thought to occur in as many as 30% of the population, and more commonly in women than men, reasons we don't understand. Most of the time, it's something quite temporary, and you know exactly why you have trouble falling asleep, because your mother-in-law is coming to visit, and you better have a clean house, or you're 10 years old and tomorrow's Christmas, or some stress is occurring in your life, exciting or scary, loss of a job, loss of health, loss of a loved one, and that occupies your mind and you can't fall asleep. But once that stress passes, the individual goes back to their usual normal sleep habits. And those individuals are not the ones who come to the physician or the sleep center for help, because they kind of know what the problem is. It's when it persists, so-called chronic insomnia, that it becomes a problem of management. I'm led to believe that of all the medications prescribed in the United States, the most frequently prescribed medication is a sleeping pill.
Sure.
People are asking, give me a pill, doc, that can shut off my mind,
right,
and I'll sleep fine. Well, there is no such pill, but patients will try over-the-counter things that may work temporarily. And then they get psychologically attached to the drug. Say, I know I can't sleep unless I take the little white pill.
Sure.
Blue pill or green pill or pink pill.
Yeah.
By the time they get to the sleep center, they've been on every sleeping pill known to man. And so we focus primarily on behavior modification.
Behavior modification starting with detox?
Well, no, that's for a totally different sleep disorder. That's for obstructive sleep apnea.
Okay.
Which is a rather serious problem because it can affect cardiovascular function. Untreated sleep apnea has been associated with increasing risk of high blood pressure, stroke, heart attack, the management of diabetes. It occurs more commonly in men. About 4% of men in the United States, 2% of women develop this problem of loud interrupted snoring.
Right.
With daytime sleepiness, and it's causing drops of oxygen repeatedly through the night, and that's where the link comes to hypertension, heart attack, and stroke, because it causes inflammation of the blood vessels every time that oxygen level drops down, and can be very successfully treated with a device that the individual sleeps with every night. You use the term CPAP, that stands for continuous positive airway pressure. That keeps the airway open, the back of the throat, and allows normal sleep to occur. And in fact, with continued use, blood pressure problems, diabetes problems begin to decrease.
Let's talk about some of the behavior modification you deal with at Hogue for people who are having some of these troubles.
Well, it's the kind of thing often that you, I think, as they say, your mother would tell you, that ideally we should all have a very regular sleep-wake schedule. It might be different person to person, but it ought to be the same for that same person, meaning the same time to bed every night, same time they get up in the morning. Americans don't do that. Those who are working have one schedule for Monday through Friday, a different schedule on the weekends,
right,
and they're going back and forth. And so the United States has been referred to as having a national sleep debt that has impacted all of us, sleepiness on the road, or in even major disasters such as the Exxon Valdez oil spill was associated with lack of sleep. The Challenger spaceship that exploded seconds into the air was traced back by a commission on being the decision makers being sleep deprived.
Oh my goodness, I hadn't heard that one.
It's important to try to focus on sleep. Our ancestors, as someone said, our sleep problems began with the invention of the light bulb. that our ancestors a century or two ago would go to bed when the sun went down, get up when the sun went up. They had an average of 9 hours of sleep every night. We get an average of 6. Most adults need at least 7 or 8, and you say,
right.
Well, that's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It is, because if you're cutting yourself short an hour every night, you build up your own sleep debt that may then spill over to sleepiness behind the wheel.
And there's really no way to make up that sleep debt, is there?
No. No, it
okay,
isn't
so
like
behavior modification, you really need to order your sleeping patterns as much as you possibly can. Of course, from time to time, there's
exactly.
going to be an emergency, and you just can't stick with it. But as much as you
of
can,
course.
What are some of the other things you can do?
Well, it's important to avoid stimulants near bedtime. Caffeine, mm-hmm. for example, we'll tell patients no coffee or Cokes after noon. Some patients say, you know, I just have to sniff chocolate, and I'm, you know, wired. Study's been done comparing the amount of caffeine in a cup of coffee. If you were to eat Hershey, you'd have to eat 8 bars of to equivalent. Or
wow.
you'd, if it's chocolate ice cream, you'd have to have 5 gallons of chocolate ice cream to be equivalent to caffeine in one cup of coffee. So most of it, a lot of it can be just imaginary.
Yeah.
But regular exercise helps, but not near bedtime.
Right.
We should exercise 4 to 6 hours before bedtime, because then as you heat the body up and it cools down, at the same time you're slipping between the sheets, exercise is helping sleep onset. Avoiding alcohol near bedtime, you think,
mm-hmm.
well, doesn't that help you fall asleep? Well, it does. But the problem is you stop drinking when you fall asleep, and
yeah.
the alcohol wears off, and you have a rebound insomnia in the middle of the night.
Sure, of course. What about warm milk?
Well, there it's hard to separate the chemical impact from just the psychological impact.
Sure.
And if your mother gave you a nice warm glass of milk that helped you fall asleep, that's probably what's important, the fact that your mother gave it to you and it was nice and warm. The tryptophan that's in it has a bit of a sedative or sedating effect.
Okay.
But as you may know, and you could, used to be able to buy tryptophan over the counter. It's an amino acid,
mm-hmm.
But it's associated with some deaths in New England, thought related to whatever was added to the pill, because the FDA doesn't control them, so you just can't buy tryptophan tablets anymore.
Better have the
That's
warm milk
idea.
Or the turkey sandwich, then.
Well, yes.
Here's a question from Bill in Hacienda Heights. He wrote in and says that he takes a Tylenol PM every night to help him sleep and wonders if that could damage his stomach lining over the long run if he takes it for years and years.
Well, no. I mean, it's one Tylenol PM at bedtime isn't going to bother your stomach.
Okay.
The problem with that is that the antihistamine that's in it, the PM part is generally Benadryl, or the chemical name for Benadryl, diphenhydramine. That is a great antihistamine, but it makes sleepiness, so that's why people don't use it for allergies during the day, but
mm-hmm.
you can take it at bedtime. The problem is, within a couple of weeks, it begins to lose its effectiveness. And unfortunately, it also has a carryover effect and may still be in your system the next morning.
Yeah, the little hangover.
It can affect bowel function. It can cause dryness of secretions such as in the mouth. And so the periodic use of it is probably fine, but the chronic use of it, there's got to be a different solution.
Okay. Simply Sleep is a Tylenol PM without, it's just the sleep element in it, right?
Yes.
And what's your verdict on Simply Sleep?
Say it again?
What is your verdict on taking something like Simply Sleep over the long run?
Well, it's the same thing. Any over-the-counter medication, you can become sort of almost immune to it. But the same thing applies to prescribed sleeping pills.
Mm-hmm, like Ambien.
Because the medication works for a while, but within several weeks, the body gets used to having it around, and its
mm-hmm.
pharmacologic effect is less and less.
Okay.
It becomes then a psychological dependency that
right.
develops, where you say, if I don't take this pill, I mean, I know I didn't take it. I'm
yeah.
now going to worry that I won't be able to fall asleep. And, of course, your prophecy comes true.
Exactly. How about herbs such as echinacea? I can never pronounce that correctly.
Well, that's not been studied reliably to give, you know, a recommendation based on that. Even melatonin that anybody can buy anywhere, I have never prescribed it because there's, again, not under FDA control because... So you don't know the potency. Sometimes it's many hundreds of times the amount of melatonin in your body. You don't know what other additives may be part of that pill. If a patient says to me, I take melatonin, it helps me fall asleep, I'll say, fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's working for you, but that's in the experimental work been done using, in a sense, purified and guaranteed potent melatonin. It can help sometimes with jet lag. It phrased to as opening the sleepy gate. That if you fly from here to New York and your bedtime is normally 11 o'clock, and there it's.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Dr. Solecki. We are out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I'm Deborah Howell. There's much more to come.